Law Focus Podcast. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. It is gone 3 minutes after seven, and you are tuned into Vow FM broadcasting on 88.1. My name is Millicent Ndiweni, and I am not alone. I am together with my colleague here, Tshepo Mohapi. Remember that Law Focus is a show that aims to deal with issues relating to legal matters. We want to inform you about your legal rights, and we want to have critical conversations about issues within and off the law.
Yeah, now we all in our lives have to make use of lawyers at some stage in our life. I mean, an example might be when you purchase property, when perhaps you find yourself on the wrong side of the law, when you have problems at your work, like being dismissed or unfairly disciplined, or if you go bankrupt or your marriage comes to a nasty end by a divorce. All of those would require you to, you know, get the services of an attorney. And there are instances like that where you almost don't have a choice but to make use of an attorney. And we try to present those kinds of scenarios to you so that you can understand the law a little bit better.
Exactly. And as Tshepo has said, we have gone with an issue of the law, a branch of the law known as deceased estates tonight. And as we delve into it, we realize how important it is, because you know what? When anyone dies, there are things, there are benefits that are supposed to go to certain people, and they, those people are supposed to inherit, whether it's property or assets or finances, and we need to make sure that that actually does happen. And how else to better make sure of that but to employ an attorney, or in the least, to seek the necessary legal advice?
Well, yeah, the famous saying is, the only two certainties in life are death and taxes. And it's true. At some stage, as macabre as it might sound, we're going to not be here anymore, each of us. And so it is a part of the law that is going to affect us, each and every one of us. Some of us won't get a divorce. Some of us won't get bankrupt. Some of us won't buy a property outright. But all of us will at some stage die. Now, sure. To have answers to all of our pressing questions, we've got a young legal expert. She's brilliant. I know her personally. And she's quickly ascending the legal ladder. Her name is Mrs. Alexandra Wilding, and she's from Hugh Reichlin Attorneys in Norwood, and she's going to shed some light about what she knows and the advice that she can give about dealing with deceased estates.
And while we look forward to that and to her expertise, you may be involved if you would like to. Any questions that you're afraid we might not ask, or that we might not address, any comments that you wish to make, any wisdom that you would like to share, please do get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus, or on Facebook, you can look for Law Focus. And of course, the landline is working on 011-717-9881. Yes, that's it. And then remember that our podcasts are available. Just visit vits.journalism.co.za/law or the Vits Radio Academy page on Iono. After this, we continue with our legal hotspots. Thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer. Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspot.
Yeah, welcome back, and we just want to take a quick look at our legal hotspots, the hottest legal stories of the week. 26 years into democracy, and I cannot believe that this topic is back on the agenda. But this is South Africa, yeah, and it is. So F.W. de Klerk has been a hot topic, amazingly, for the last sort of 2 to 3 weeks. This comes after he made comments that he didn't agree that apartheid was a crime against humanity. Mm. Of course, despite the rest of the planet condemning it almost entirely and completely over the almost the entirety of its existence in 2020, the former president says it's not a crime against humanity. Nevertheless, he's now apologized for any quote unquote hurt feelings, any hurt his words have caused. Now, he withdrew his statement after what he said earlier this month that about that it wasn't a crime against humanity. So he's making now this apology for that. He made the statement during an interview, I think, on the SABC. And he basically tried to say that apartheid being classed as a crime against humanity was anti-propaganda, and it had communist origins as well as ANC origins. The rest of us who know anything about world history know that the UN declared it a crime much before that. All right, and it also now the Klerk Foundation retracted the comment and apologized for the quote-unquote confusion, anger, and hurt that it has caused. The Klerk was credited with his sort of role in bringing about the end of apartheid. I suppose that is now debatable, maybe always been debatable. Yeah. And for that, he was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. There's now a petition to perhaps review the Nobel Peace Prize. I know for a fact that the Nobel Peace Prize has never been retracted from anybody. It goes against their statutes. But it's an interesting debate, but it's really one that 26 years into democracy should we really be having this debate, the emboldenment of racism, and the denial of the pain caused by apartheid, I think is getting worse in this country, and the likes of de Klerk do not assist it. But there we are, he's now retracted it, and let's see whether he behaves as though he's retracted it.
Yep. Well, while some people are yet to check their privilege, busy minimizing apartheid, we have other people maximizing our constitution by coming up with new labor law amendments that are supposed to obviously make workers happier. And what basically these labor laws are with regards to the minimum wage as well as parental leave. So as per some amendments to the National Minimum Wage Act of 2018, employers are now required to pay workers at around 3.8% more an hour. This basically means that a worker cannot be paid less than 20.76 rand an hour, whereas previously the minimum was at 20 rand an hour. Well, in my personal opinion, it is very important that obviously every single cent counts, but it might be questionable still that how much of a difference will this amount make. Not that it's not important that it has to increase, but it's so minimal. How much of a difference, even when you actually add the totalities of all these hours per month. The least paid, even with these slight increases, will be farm workers who will be earning slightly over 18 rand an hour, domestic workers over 15 rand an hour, and those working on expanded public works programs with just over 11 rand an hour. And then regarding our parental leave, the amendments to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act of 1997 will include employees, including fathers, being entitled to at least 10 consecutive days of leave. And this is not just for when you have given birth, or your wife or mother of the baby has given birth, but also for when you are adopting a child. So when the adoption is granted, you are allowed to have this leave. And these laws will be effective as of the 1st of March 2020.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm expecting to hear quite a lot about people saying, ooh, I can't afford my domestic worker. Ooh, I can't afford my farm worker. Ooh, you know, all of those, you get all of those comments. But we're talking, and I'm just going to remind you, 18.68 an hour, 15.57 an hour for a domestic worker, and 11 rand 42 for public works programs. So we're not talking huge amounts of money, but we are talking money that can make a difference in someone's life. But it's South Africa, and you will hear people say, oh, but the economy, my word, I can't afford
You can't afford them?
Rather let it go. Yeah, rather let it go. But it's always that comment. All right, let's go on to the Zondo Commission quickly. It's sort of quietened down a little bit. It hasn't been as spicy as it used to be. If we could look back at the days of Agliotti and how he sung like a canary, that man, and then there was Zuma and his constant coughing and blah, blah. Anyway, and then not attending, etc. Now we are dealing with the monies that was stolen. There's no other word to say it. Stolen from the Richards Bay Mhlathuzi Water sort of program. And this is an example of how money really went away. And Mr. X, he's scared for his life, so he's been permitted to testify in camera and not reveal his identity to the public. I assume the commission knows his identity, but the public won't know his identity. And he's appearing in the commission. He's talking about 3 million rand, which was paid into his account of his company, Isibonelo, for work that he had done. You know, and he was paid that money before any work was done. And this was by Richards Bay Mhlathuzi Water, I think, which is a state-related sort of enterprise. And he testified how he would get instructions from the program manager, who was Mr. Majola, and he forwarded the money to him as well. Now, three million might not sound like a big amount of money if you consider the Agliottis and the Bosasas, and that hundreds of millions we're talking about there. But it's these transactions of 3 million here, 2 million here, half a million there, that go on every day, that drain the fiscus. And this is a very, very good example of A, how money is stolen, and then B, how legitimate businesses are sort of cut out from doing legitimate work for the department and then delivering a legitimate service. It's these transactions, not just the big ones, these little transactions that we don't take so much focus of, are the ones that are really, really, really killing us, because they are in the thousands per annum. I can tell you they're in the thousands per annum. Anyway, but let's see how that goes along, and we'll see if there are any repercussions for these people and the Zondo Commission. I hope it doesn't turn into another Farnham Commission and another blah, blah commission. But all right, let's see.
Well, speaking of crimes, we've got the Nuan residents, which is a community in Cape Town, who had prison officials come to speak to them to basically request them to accept ex-convicts back into the community. So President Ramaphosa had to give his reasoning for this move, which already has taken place. But basically what happened is that the Paul's Moor prison happens to be very, very full, and because it is overcrowded, they came to the decision that, okay, let's solve this problem by basically cutting short these people's sentences. And obviously that has to be okayed by the president, which it was. Unfortunately, the rehabilitation programs in the prison were also not really effective because of the fact that it's so full. So instead of having 28 convicts in a cell, they were sitting at 65 inmates. It's kind of like what happens in schools nowadays. This move has been reported will not apply to any offenders of sexual crimes, murder, attempted murder, armed robbery, sedition, high treason, sabotage, terrorism, and domestic violence or child abuse. So the South African inmates were already released in December of 2019, and then the immigrants who were inmates in the same prison were released in January this year. So yes, that's basically what has happened in our legal hotspots this week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspot. Listening to Law Focus? Connect with BarFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
All right, it's about 17 minutes after 7 o'clock, and you're back with me, Tapo, and I'm with Millicent. Remember, you can follow us or comment on what we're discussing today at on Twitter, which is at VowFM, using the hashtag LawFocus. Remember to call us on 011-717-9881. Today we're discussing deceased estates and how important they can be. I know personally they can turn into a nightmare if you are not careful. An absolute nightmare. You don't want that. Really, you don't. Because it's hard to resolve an issue where the person who's at the center of it is no more. But to get a better idea of what we're talking about and to get a little bit of advice, answer some of them, the more popular questions that we have, we've got Ms. Alexandra Wilding, and she practices out of Norwood at Hugh Reichlin Attorneys. Hello, Alexandra. Hi, Alexandra. Oh, well, our line seems to be a little bit, fuzzled at the moment, and we'll get back to her soon. Now, deceased estates, you might wonder who in our sort of, in our legal system deals with deceased estates. And that would be the master of the High Court. It's a division of the Department of Justice. It actually got very little to do with the High Court. I don't know why they called it that. It's a very old-fashioned name. But it's a division of the Department of Justice, and they deal with deceased estates, trust registrations, and things that have to do with children. For example, money that is due to children. It's that sort of stuff. And it's run quite professionally, although 2 weeks ago we had quite a major upset in the Master's office, with virtually all of the branches having been closed down for a short period of time, about 2 or 3 days, when nobody could access their offices, and they were dealing with internal affairs. I think we've got Alexandra back on the line. Let's see if we can talk to her. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi, Tsepo. How are you?
I'm fine, and so?
Good, thank you.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Today we're going to be discussing deceased estates, which I know you are, very, very excited about. You know, it's something that you like to do, I know. I was explaining to the listeners that it's inevitable that everybody will have to go through this at some stage, because nobody is guaranteed. At some stage, everybody's going to go, and their estate has to be dealt with. Now, tell me, how important a branch of our law would you consider deceased estates to be?
Well, it is the only part of our law which will deal with the assets of the person who has passed away. So it's extremely important, but unfortunately, a lot of people fail to prepare themselves for this event, which, as you said, is inevitable.
I imagine that a lot of that reluctance might come from having to contemplate your own demise, or that of your parent, or that of your spouse, and you might be afraid of that. But if you don't, I imagine it could be difficult to deal with the fallout if you don't prepare.
Well, yes. So if you don't prepare, it can be a lot more difficult dealing with your estate, or the executor dealing with your estate afterwards. And this is what we call intestate succession, where your estate will be wound up in accordance with the Interstate Succession Act, which is basically where you don't have a will. And that can be quite difficult, especially if minor children are involved and you need to appoint a guardian. It's much better to have a will and deal with those things up front, and unfortunately face the reality that, one day you too will pass on.
And Alexandra, for the people then who are listening, obviously this is new to them in terms of not really understanding what interstate law means, or interstate law. How do you then further explain these two procedures in a more practical manner so that we can understand better?
Okay, so in terms of interstate succession, what happens is your executor will be your closest surviving family member, and that could be a spouse. That will also be the master's discretion, who will ultimately guide you in that course after taking some factors into consideration. In addition to that, if you are married and just have a surviving spouse, then your estate will devolve, what we call devolve upon the surviving spouse. And devolve is just a fancy word for saying distributed to your spouse. And then there are further processes, such as if you are married and have children, well, then you have to determine things like your marital regime, You have to apportion something that we call child's portion or 250,000 rand, whichever is greater, to the spouse. And only after that, if there's anything left, is it divided equally amongst your spouse and your potential children that are still alive. And it goes so on and so forth, and you have to look along the generational lines to see who has survived you. So in the instance that you don't have a surviving spouse or children, then you would look at your parents. And if your parents aren't around at that time, then you look at siblings. It's a lot more detailed than that, but just to give a bit of a brief overview, so that people can understand. But it's much better to state up front who you wish to receive what.
Yeah, certainly. And generally then, when a person does die, what are the practical steps that should be taken with regards to this law? So if I lose a parent, what are the first steps that I must take to make sure that things are done accordingly?
So can you repeat what you're trying to say? Sorry, the line's a bit breaking up a bit.
So basically, someone dies in my family. I'm responsible for that person. I'm the closest relative to that person. Practically, what are the steps that I'm then supposed to take to ensure that all these processes that you have spoken about, even if this person has died without a will, actually go according to plan? What am I supposed to do?
Okay. So what you can do is either you can, as a member of the public, approach the master's office directly. And something that I find very useful, and I deal with this on a daily basis, is I type into Google master's forms, and it will take you to the master's website, which has a whole lot of forms you need to fill out in order to report a deceased estate. It's much easier for you as a member of the public to report a deceased estate, which is under 250,000 rand. And you'll hear that that figure is mentioned a lot. That's the threshold that the master looks at. And if your estate is under 250,000 rand, that is wound up in accordance with Section 18(3) of the Administration of Estates Act. However, if your loved one has passed on and the estate is worth over 250,000 rand, what you can do is you can approach an attorney or a law firm and ask them to wind up the estate. And what you would do in that process is gather information as to the deceased's assets, liabilities, income and expenses, as well as proof thereof. And what the attorneys will do, either they will become the executor, depending on if you hand that over to them, or they act as agents and they will report the estate to the master and deal with all the processes involved.
Mm. All right. Okay, well, it's about 25 past 7. You're with Millicent and Tsepo. We're talking about deceased estates and how important it is to get those kinds of things right and to have an understanding of how, or at least what the process is when you are going to go through reporting of a deceased estate. Remember, we're on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. You can also call us on 011-717-9881. Now, some people, Alexander, might be put off by the potential cost of drawing up a will. Think, oh, this is such an important document, it must be incredibly expensive. Is that the case? What does it generally cost to draw up a will?
So, not necessarily. Obviously, you have to take into factors such as how complex the will is. And most of the time, just get a very basic will in place. And then at a different stage in life, maybe think about getting a more detailed will. But things such as how technical the will is going to be or which firm of attorneys you approach will depend on the cost of the will. One of the things that could make a will more expensive is something like adding a trust to the will. And that's important if you have a minor child involved and you want to just control their inheritance and make sure the trustees overlook that. Mm. But what I would advise listeners to do is take advantage of something we call Wills Week, which is where a whole lot of firms sign up to draft wills for free for members of the public, and it usually takes place in September every year. And if you want to find out which attorneys take part in this, you can go to the lfsa.org.za website and have a look there for more information.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thanks for that. We will repeat that a little bit later. Now, in terms of how often you should change your will, is there a guideline, or when would you recommend that a will at the very least be looked at? You know, what events or what timeline would be advisable for you to have a look at your will again once you have one in place?
So I think the general rule to go by is every time there is a major change in circumstance in your life. So if you get married, if you have children, if one of the beneficiaries of your will has subsequently passed away, or unfortunately if you get divorced, these are all times to look at redrafting your will.
Good. Oh, okay. Right. And how long does it take generally, usually, to wind up in an estate? I'm talking about the more complicated one, the one that's above 250,000. How long does that normally take?
I would say that, I mean, it can take up to several years, you know, and that's really in the extremely complex ones. Sometimes it can take a few months. But if you are dealing with an estate over 250,000 rand, let's say it's in the millions, and unforeseen litigation comes up, we all know how long litigation takes, that could draw you back for a few years. But generally, I would say a few months to maybe a year or two.
Okay, and speaking of obviously all these monies that come into play regarding the will, how do you know that you are not being cheated, you know, in terms of appointing the right executor to administer the estate and being sure that the estate will actually be wound up, you know, appropriately? If I'm not a lawyer, if I don't know the maths, how do I verify that all the detail is actually accurate?
So what you can do is, just as a safeguard to start off with, is you can remain the executor of the estate, let's say if it's intestate succession and you're the closest related family member, and what you do is then you later appoint a firm of attorneys to act as an agent on behalf of the executor, and that, what that enables you to do is you can still sign off on all documentation, and one of the big things involved in this point is your liquidation and distribution account. That cannot be submitted to the master without the executor signing off on that. And what you have to do when drafting a liquidation and distribution account is every entry in that account must have supporting documentation. So if you really needed to, I suppose you could take it to another expert, not necessarily even an attorney, but, you know, someone like a chartered accountant, or, you know, someone who deals with numbers, or another firm of attorneys who could just verify that that information is correct.
Okay.
But generally, you would be able to tell from the supporting documentation whether or not what has been recorded is in fact true.
Okay, yeah, that's critically important. So we're going to just allow you to have a little breather before we continue with all the other many, many questions that we do have. Please stay tuned. It has gone 32 minutes after 7.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Right, it's exactly 33 minutes after 7, and we're discussing deceased estates with Mrs. Alexandra Wilding. You're listening to Law Focus on Vio FM 88.1. Remember, we're on Twitter at Vio FM using the hashtag Law Focus. We've been discussing deceased estates, and we've touched on a few things, that there are two distinct categories of estates, that being below 250,000 and the other one being above 250,000 rand, and that they're dealt with quite differently. The responsibilities are quite different as well. So above 250,000 rand, you would need some professional advice, and below 250,000 rand, you not just advice but assistance, and below 250,000 rand, you might not need as much assistance. And the way you're married, how many children you have, who survives you, and whether you have a will or not is also a factor in the way in which your estate is going to be administered. Now, we've touched on those. We've got a couple more, perhaps, more in tune with people who are interested in the law and who are interested in practicing this branch of the law. Well, Millicent, go ahead and ask her.
Okay. No, Alexandra, so I hope you got your breather and you have, you know, all right. Yeah. You know, you're doing well. You're doing very well so far. The common mistakes that, as well as the biggest challenges that can arise in working on a deceased estate case, what are those?
So often what we find happening is a family member of the deceased will fail to report the estate to the master or approach attorneys to report the estate to the master on their behalf straight after the deceased has passed away. And too many times they report the estate years later, which causes issues such as beneficiaries have passed on, there's been loss of assets. So it really does create a problem. And in addition, sometimes other assets come out of the woodwork, and then what you have to do is submit what we call a supplementary liquidation and distribution account. And if the estate is over 250 rand, you then have to re-advertise notices in terms of section 29 and section 35 of the administration of the Estates Act, as well as pay master's fees again. So it just becomes such a logistical nightmare.
And you know, like with all, you know, there's usually prescription in law. Does this also apply in this case? And if so, what are the time frames?
No. So as far as I'm aware, there isn't something called prescription with a 3-year period for deceased estates. But in terms of the law, generally what should happen is you should report a deceased estate within 14 days of the deceased passing away.
Okay. But if you did not do that and you did it later, you wouldn't forfeit. You just need to obviously provide more evidence and it's more strenuous work for you.
Yes. So there aren't any consequences to it, really. I mean, you can go and have a further look at that in the Administration of Estates Act. Mm. But generally, there's no real penalty attached to it. And as a lot of things in South Africa, the master's office can sometimes be a little bit more lax with that kind of stuff. So as long as the estate's reported, that's what matters, and you have supporting documentation. I can't stress enough that you should speak to your loved ones about what assets they have, what liabilities they have, that when the time comes, it's so much easier to administer their estate.
True that. Okay, final question for you before we let you go. Those are people who are interested in particularly this branch of the law and they want to follow in your footsteps and practice succession law. firstly, is it very profitable to enter it? And secondly, what do you think then the most important qualities are that one needs in order for them to succeed in it?
So what I would say is you can be extremely successful coming into this aspect of the law. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as you say, it's a reality we all have to face, so I suppose you'll never run out of business.
Yes.
And a few of my colleagues only run estate law firms that focus on deceased estates, and they're doing well.
Of course.
So it's definitely a possibility. What I would say, if you are interested in this aspect of the law, I think you should be someone who is organized and naturally an administrator, because there are so many processes to keep track of. And on top of that, also be a people person, because you are dealing with people at their most vulnerable times, and you're also dealing with people at the master's office who are sometimes overlooked and just need that bit of encouragement, and to be treated, you know, as one would expect to treat anyone else. And I think often we take that for granted, and there's this attitude that they don't necessarily want to assist because it can be a very mundane and difficult job.
Certainly. Thank you so much. I think you have been very lucid. That was Alexandra Wilding from Hugh Reichlin Attorneys. I hope I said it right. I was listening to Tepo and the pronunciation. Thank you so much for joining us on Law Focus. We appreciate
your time. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
Bye. All right. Thank you very much, Mrs. Wilding. We appreciate your answers and your participation tonight.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
Yes. All right. So that was our professional and who deals with deceased estates on a regular basis. And she gave us a few of her insights and what it is that you should watch out for. Now, if you are a budding law student or budding attorney, you're studying law, this is actually mandatory. It's part of your a curriculum when you are studying, and more importantly, it is part of your exam when you write your board exams. You cannot become an attorney without actually passing deceased estates as an exam, not just as a module.
If you're running away from maths, it's coming up.
Yeah. The maths isn't that bad, but yeah, if you get that wrong, you're going to have problems as well. But
well,
it
speaking
is
of maths, Tepo, because I know that you also do deal with this a branch of the law often, you know, looking at what you actually practice in. Tax implications for deceased estates, how does that actually work?
You know, there aren't that many tax implications. The threshold for tax would be in excess of 3.5 million rand is where you start looking at paying tax.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There is some estate duties, master's fees and stuff like that. But the threshold for tax is really 3.5 million. So the vast majority of South African estates actually are under 250,000. Remember,
not much.
Alexandra said that we're going to throw that number around a lot. Mm. So the vast majority of estates in South Africa are under 250,000 rand. But it's all, you only start paying tax above 3.5 million. There is a special sort of dispensation that does exist. It's a complicated one, so I won't get too much into it. It's called massing of estates. So you have two people who are married to one another and they mass their estate. And it does have a tax implication where it may raise, it can, under certain situations, raise the tax threshold to 7 million rather than to 3 million.
Because they've joined
because they've massed their estates.
Okay.
But that's something of a complication, and it's not always applicable to every estate.
Yeah.
And even the massed ones is not sometimes always a bit of a complicated. But that's...
Well, then considering that most people in South Africa actually have an estate of less than 250,000, which I, you know, it's actually, wow, it boggles the mind to think how poor we really, really are. Does that then mean that there aren't that much litigation issues in this field because of that?
You'd be surprised at how quickly siblings and children and parent and child can turn on each other. So I'm telling you, you can have a 1 million rand estate, which is okay. No one's really fighting. You can have a 100,000 rand estate and people are willing to pull out, get knives and guns at the same time. I'm telling you, no joke. You know, really large estates as well, where there's just so much, it's liquid, it's all of that. Nobody's really fighting with anybody else about it. So the size of the estate isn't really an indication of whether it's going to go smoothly or not.
That's interesting.
It's the personalities.
Sure.
And whether or not the deceased made correct provisions.
Yeah. All right. It's almost 7:45 this evening. We are speaking about deceased estates. It's Tepo and Millicent.
We forgot who we were for a second. What happened?
I almost said I'm Tepo. Yeah. I mean, really. But before we continue, Tepo, I've got some interesting questions that I do want to ask. Let's just take a bit of a breather and then when we get back, we'll do that.
Law Focus. Point of information.
Okay, welcome back to Law Focus. We are rounding up our conversation this evening about deceased estates. So I just wanted to get a little bit almost philosophical here. First of all, Tepo, regarding different marriages, because obviously deceased estates happens outside of marriage, but also in marriages. So if it does happen in marriages, we've got different types of marriages in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
And we've got different laws for depending what kind of marriage it is that you fall under.
Yeah.
Does it affect whether it's a religious marriage or a custom customary marriage or a civil union, or does it apply the same for all?
Well, as soon as a marriage comes into existence in South Africa, it's a marriage. So it wouldn't make a difference what type of marriage you have, whether it falls into category of a civil marriage, a civil union, or a customary marriage. That's not so important as long as there's a marriage. What would be of significance in terms of deceased estates would be the type of marriage it is, the matrimonial property regime of that marriage, whether the estate is in community or out of community. Not so much whether you're traditionally married or, of course, if you have more than one spouse, which you can do a whole topic on. If you have, you're traditionally married, you have more than one spouse and then you die, that has its own set of rules. But as a general rule, doesn't matter which act you got married under. What's more important is whether you're married in or out of community property, whether the accrual does or doesn't apply. That's more important.
Okay, that's interesting. Because, you know, as we started the conversation earlier on, I found the interstate law we have, as Alexandra was explaining, the estate being wound up from the closest family units so it would be the children, the parents, or grandparents, the cousins, and then it branches out like that, right?
Yeah.
So in the sense of African culture, where the idea of family is more extremely unified, where someone, you refer to your cousin as your brother or your sister, how does this not seem like a very Western concept then in the application of interstate law for African families that are very traditional?
Yeah, well, you could say that, but no, I wouldn't really say that it's completely foreign. No, I wouldn't say that at all. What they've gotten rid of, which was in existence in almost every culture, was primogeniture, which was male heirs would be take precedence of a female. Now that existed all over the world for the most part of human history. It's just that it's been phased out, and one of the last places that it was phased out was black South Africans. So for a long time, black South Africans had a different way of black estates were dealt with differently to how white estates were dealt. And primogeniture existed in black estates, whereas in white estates they really didn't exist. I don't think that it's all that foreign, no. Let me give you an idea of just a rundown of how precedence works. I'm the deceased now. Wife takes precedence, and then it's children. So it's wife, children, and then it would be their children.
Their children.
My children's children. And it would go down. And normally that would resolve the issue. Right? The only time it would go up, so ascendance, would be if I died with no wife and no children, they'd then look up to my parents, assuming both of them are alive. Right? If one of them is alive and one of them has passed away, they'd look at that one parent, but then they may look at the deceased parent and her children, which would now be my siblings.
Yeah.
So then a portion of it may go to my sibling. It's extremely rare for us to go beyond that.
Okay.
Very, very rare. Right. That would happen if someone immigrated to South Africa, never got married and never had children, but they immigrated alone and they're completely and then they died intestate. That's where you'd struggle to find descendants, ascendants, a spouse. But normally you can wind it up in that. It has caused tension, especially with very traditional people, but the benefit
of that
primogeniture. A lot of people in the past really abused that. So spouses were virtually disinherited by the brothers of the deceased. It caused a lot of problems, but the benefit of having primogeniture, and I don't think there is any, whatever the benefit was in the past, has been completely annihilated now. I mean, it doesn't exist. There's no benefit to having primogeniture. Also, another thing is that an adopted child inherits the same as a child, as a natural child. Also, a child born out of wedlock is no longer disinherited anymore as well. Now, a child born out of wedlock inherits in the same way that a child
and
born.
I think those are very important changes within the law.
Yes, yes, yes. So, I mean, it's not just primogeniture which went away. It was the distinction between adopted and not adopted, natural, and it was the distinction between born in wedlock and born out of wedlock. All those distinctions have been done away with.
So it's indeed a very interesting aspect of the law. I think I've learned a lot, and I hope that you have too. So any final words, Tepo, for us this evening before we close?
Well, I would say that in as much as we don't like, particularly us black people, we really don't like to talk about death. We really don't. And
you're calling it to yourself, I get it when you say these things.
Yeah, I know.
It's
coming along. but it is an inevitability, as much as we don't like to say it. It's an inevitability. You need to make provision for when that day does come. I recently lost a parent, relatively recently lost a parent, and luckily I had a parent who wasn't, this is my mother, who wasn't very shy about me, and we were close, very close. So she wasn't very shy about talking to me about what must happen when she's no longer around. And she died fairly suddenly, but fortunately we'd had a few conversations about it, and I was then able to do precisely what she wanted me to do, and then I had very little resistance from anybody, whether it's my siblings or it's my extended family, although I get along fine with them, about what it is I'm going to do and how it is I'm going to do it as the executor of the deceased estate, other than the normal arguments that people tend to have. Other than those, I haven't had too difficult a time. There are other estates where nothing is said, no one's in, and then it really turns into a real, a proper nightmare. Mm. And it can take years of litigation, it can take years of fighting and hurt and all of that to sort out the deceased estates. You need to also have your finances in order when you pass on.
Yeah.
So if you have a property and you owe on the bond, you need life insurance on that.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't stop because you... So you need to know about... You need some financial acumen.
Mm.
Examples, so you owe on a car. The fact that you pass away doesn't mean that you don't pay on the car. You still have to pay. So you take out insurance on the car. Take out insurance on over your house to settle the balance of your house. Other things can come a little bit later, policies and all of that. It's much easier, much better to have those big assets or big debts closed when you pass away than trying to now raise money from something else to pay it into that. So you must have a good idea about what goes on. And perhaps lastly, very quickly, don't lie to yourself about your children. Yeah? Really, you mustn't lie to yourself about your children. You might love your children.
Yes.
Your children might love you. But don't be romantic about your kids. If you know your eldest son, you can't make that guy the executor. He's not going to have an epiphany.
No matter how much you love him.
Yeah, he's not going to have an epiphany once. If you know that your youngest child is selfish, is just going to run away with the money, don't make him the executor.
Mm.
Rather make your brother, who's older than them, the executor, and them the beneficiaries of your will. Don't be romantic. Even your siblings might not get your children might not get along with each other.
Yeah.
They might love each other, but they might not have personalities. So you must really be, think about it. You must be practical. You mustn't be romantic about your kids. You know, if you're a parent, you know your kids. You know, this one, is going to pull a stunt when I'm gone.
Yes.
If I give them too much authority. Well, then don't give it to their child.
Mm.
Or if it's none of your children, you find someone who you trust and you give that person the authority. And you know the person who's not going to take nonsense from your children. So be practical about it. Don't be romantic.
Okay. And a quick case then for the will being a necessity.
Right, a will is a necessity. We do have interstate succession, right?
Yeah.
And it will have your heirs, like I explained, it's spouse, descendants, ascendants, and then fraternal people, okay? You'll have all of that. But it's the only way in which to ensure that your wishes are carried out to the letter, is if you put it in a will.
Right.
That's the only way of doing it. Right. Now, it also opens the door for you to do things which I'm not sure are great, like disinheriting people. Now, it's up to you to do that. But you also got to think about the consequences between your heirs once you've gone. So if you disinherit somebody, what impact would that have? Or if you don't disinherit them, for instance, you might give them the right to live in a particular place. But you may not give them the house, but say, but listen, you can't have the house, but I'll give you the right to live there until you pass away, which might be just fine with the person, you see. So you got to really think about what you want, but what are you going to leave behind? Is it going to work, what you're going to leave behind?
Mm.
Right, so you must be really practical about it. And if there's a, you know, if you have children, if you have a second wife, and your second wife is not the mother of your children, really, get a will. Don't even play games. Get a will. There's no way that that's going to work out well for you. All right.
All right. No, that was a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much, Tepo. Thank you also to Alexandra, whom we had earlier on. For our podcast of this show and all our other shows, please do visit IONO or vits.journalism.co.za/law. Up next will be the voice of hip hop with Cesar the MC. But from our producer, Simba Honde, our technical producer, Kutlwano Serame, our law focus researchers, Sitle Monama, Tepo Mohapi, and myself, Melissa Ntindiweni, thank you for tuning in to Law Focus tonight.
Good night.
Law Focus on Solvang 88.1 Point of Information. Law Focus Podcast.